Welcome to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. We've put up some changes on the website at hisholychurch.info. We will transfer those changes eventually to hisholychurch.org and .net, but we're still in the process of adding a few more changes. One of the changes is in the network drop-down menus on both the side menus and the menus above. I've also increased the number of Google Maps that we have on the network to show where a lot of the people are that are interested in seeking the Kingdom of Heaven with us. And those maps are starting to show the different locations of people. They don't tell you who everybody is. They tell you who the contact ministers are. They don't tell you who everybody is on the network or everybody is on the Kingdom News list, but they do signify that there are people in those areas that are showing interest and the network is growing. Many of the people haven't been entered into those maps yet because that will be the job of the local contact ministers. Everybody who joins the network should choose somewhere a personal contact minister that is going to look after them. It's a buddy system. It is a way in which to keep track of each other, and if you love your neighbor as yourself, you will want to keep track of him. You will want him to keep track of you. You care about each other. That's the way the network works. That's the way the kingdom has worked in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Yes, the kingdom has always been here, before the flood, after the flood, everywhere. The kingdom is the right to be ruled by God. It is those people who have remained under the authority of God and not gone under the authority of Nimrod and kings and pharaohs and Caesars and any other individual man who wants to exercise authority over you. Now, there are many ways to go under those authorities. There are many ways to not go under those authorities. But if you do not care about each other, you will be under tribute. The slothful shall be under tribute. Slothful in what? Slothful in the weightier matters. What are the weightier matters? Jesus told you what the weightier matters were. If you have a preacher who is your minister, and he does not know what the weightier matters are, you should get a different minister. That is, I would do that right away. I mean, if he doesn't even know what Jesus called the weightier matters, you need to find another minister. Now, we have a local minister that comes down to this valley. We are a very sparsely populated valley. There's a local church that was abandoned by the Episcopalians. And a local rancher bought it and makes it available to have church. But there is no local minister. I used to go down there every week for many years and did not bring the full message of the gospel. People aren't ready to receive that. It's very hard. People are all tied up in their own philosophies and religions and doctrines. And it's very difficult for them to accept the fullness of the gospel. First time Jesus spoke about it in a local church where he was, they tried to throw him over a cliff. So it's not a real popular message, to say the least. But what you can do is you can slice the meat a little thin. You should... when you start giving them the meat of the gospel, you can't, you know, these people are, some of them aren't even used to eating good food, much less the milk and honey of the gospel. But when you start giving them the meat of the gospel, the facts and the information, it doesn't go down very good. They're not used to chewing food. And so you've got to slice it a little thin. And that's what we've been doing. I asked the local minister just this last week, what are the weightier matters? And he stammered around a bit, but he got three out of the four. That's pretty good. That's way better. He had said, I just read that, he said, and he was able to give me three out of the four, which was far better than about 90% of the ministers who are around. Can give you... So what are the weightier matters? I mean, Jesus says that better that you have left off your rituals, your pots and pans washing, whatever your rituals are, and tended to the weightier matters. And that's what we're going to talk about a little bit, not only the weightier matters, but some of those pots and pans and rituals that people invent, the doctrines that bind people up and keep them from understanding the fullness of the gospel. And so I haven't told you what the weightier matters are, and I'll hold you in suspense on that. But Mark Bernucci wrote me this morning and asked if I would talk about the Sabbath and also about the name. And those are topics that are constantly dividing people. The calendar. What is the calendar we should be using? Should we be using the solar calendar? Should we be using the lunar calendar? Tremendous controversies, and I won't tell you which one to use. By the time we get to the end of this, I will not create a doctrine that says you have to use this one or you're out, or you have to use that one or you're out. Because the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. I'm not going to rule over you on that. Now, we take a Sabbath off here, but we don't require other people to do that. We require you to do what Jesus required you to do, and that's to seek the kingdom. If you don't understand the meaning of the Sabbath now, then maybe you will tomorrow. That's the way we are going to approach it. Now, we'll talk about the Sabbath. I'll lay you odds that most of the Sabbath keepers out there do not understand what the Sabbath is. That's just my educated guess. The same as most ministers out there don't know the weightier matters. If you're a Sabbath keeper and I ask you what are the weightier matters, how many of you can list those off? You can't list those off, and you may be missing some essentials of the gospel because you can't even list off the weightier matters, all four that Jesus listed. So, take the Ten Commandments, for instance. Talks about keeping a Sabbath holy. You know, you go into one church and they'll list the Ten Commandments different than another church. That's another question. I'm not sure anybody has got the numbers of the Ten Commandments in the right order. Where is the commandment? Where is the different breaks in which phrase belongs to which commandment. They're not numbered in the Bible. There's a numerous thou shalt not. If you count it by thou shalt not, you'll get a different pattern of the Ten Commandments than you do when you look at most churches and even most synagogues and their distribution of the Ten Commandments. So what is really a part of the commandment and what is description about the commandment? Well, we're not going to go into all that, but it's great food for thought. But they do talk about a Sabbath, keeping the Sabbath holy. So what do they say about that Sabbath and keeping it holy? There's numerous different ways to consider what the Sabbath is. You've got several Hebrew letters, and as we know, all Hebrew letters have meanings. And those meanings are brought together to form words, much the same way as Chinese and Japanese form words with symbols, except they would have some 400 letters, if you counted their symbols as letters, and the combination of those 400 symbols we're producing, you know, thousands of words. But in Hebrew, you've only got 24, 26, 28 different symbols there. And those symbols form words. The order in which you put those words together is going to identify the meaning as much as which word, which letters you put there. You've got an Aleph, which is composed of a Yod, a Vav, and a Yod. So you actually are combining even letters to form letters. So there should be a clue in understanding the meaning of those letters to understand the meaning of the word. And there is. And you need to have a sense of concept when you're reading that Hebrew. And then it will help lead you into an understanding of the language itself. This is part of how we begin to understand that the gospel is a fuller gospel than we realize, that Abraham and Jesus Christ and Moses were actually teaching exactly the same thing, because they were serving exactly the same God. And so they were all doing the same thing, talking about the same thing, talking about the same way to relate to each other and to relate to God. Yet you would think, by looking at the Old Testament, that God changed his mind when Christ came, changed his tactics, changed his procedures, because they were certainly doing different things in the Old Testament than they are doing in the New Testament, aren't they? Well, actually, they were doing exactly the same thing. Moses and Jesus Christ were in absolute total agreement. We see them standing next together with Elijah. The problem is that the Pharisees did not understand the Old Testament. That's the problem. Now, we have an article up on the web at hisholychurch.info under sermons, under the word sabbath.php, that goes into this thing called Sabbath and what it is. Remember now, how do you keep the Sabbath holy? Do you keep it holy by simply taking off the Sabbath? And when is the Sabbath? Is the Sabbath on Saturday? Do we figure the Sabbath by moon? How do we figure when the Sabbath is and when it's not? Now, there's a great many people that are using the lunar calendar determining the Sabbath, and there's a great many people using the solar calendar to determine the Sabbath. There's a great many people that are looking at the Old Testament and reading about the different months, and each of these months are supposed to stand for moons, and they have a complex mathematical process of figuring out when the calendar is. And much of this is not really in the Bible, but there's references in the Bible to these month and moon. Now, an interesting thing in the Bible is there are two different words for month. Two completely different words for month. Now, that's interesting, that there's two completely different words for a month, because there shouldn't be. If the letters have meaning, specific meaning, then if any word that had to do with month and moon should be very similar. And of course, they have a word that's translated month and moon, and it's exactly the same. As a matter of fact, it's given numerous strong numbers. You got 3394, 3391. 3392, 3393, and each one of those is exactly the same three Hebrew letters. Chet, Resh, Yod. Exactly the same for all those three. And 26 times, that's translated moon. 11 times, it's translated as month, but two times with 3391 is also translated moon. So they interchange that word, month and moon, several times. It's also translated as a name a couple of times, where it's actually a proper name, and they say that that name means new moon. It also, actually, if you put those letters together in several ways, you can actually come up with a little bit different meaning. Several times that word is translated as month, and it's associated with another word that might be translated as the name of a moon. But, excuse me, as a name of a month. But the name of the month also, the same exact letters for the name of the month also has another meaning. Given another strong number in other places and given another meaning, like brightness. And you have to realize that when they're translating, many of the sentences you see translated into English from the Hebrew, sometimes you'll have 20 words in the English sentence and only 5 words in the Hebrew sentence. The translators play really fast and loose with the Hebrew words. Almost every Hebrew word has both an abstract meaning and a specific meaning. You can find words translated numerous different ways in the Greek. In the Greek, yes, but also in the Hebrew. Hebrew words can be translated sometimes. Some of the Hebrew words in the Bible are translated 20 different ways. I mean, it's staggering. I mean, you've got a word for man that's translated 1,000 times as man, 200 times it's translated as men. Well, that's not too much difference than that. But 188 times it's translated one. 69 times it's translated husband. 27 times it's translated any. And it has over 143 other miscellaneous translations. That's just one word. Just one word is translated so many different ways. The word feast might be, and there are several words for that, but if you're dealing with the word Chet Gamma, or the equivalent of that, it actually has a couple of different appearances. Feast can be translated feast 56 times, sacrifice 3 times, feast day twice, solemnity once. Trying to think of some really good words, Melech, like what we see in Melchizedek. It could be 289 times reign, 46 times king, made 4 times, queen twice, consulted once, indeed once, make once, rule once, set once, surely once. You can start playing with the sentences and make them mean anything you want. If you can translate words into so many different... The word for day, 2,000 times it's translated day. 64 times it's translated time. 44 times daily, 18 times ever, 14 times year. Yeah, the word for day translated year 14 times. This isn't in connection with another word, it's just they decided to translate it year. Continually 10 times, when 10 times, as 10 times, while 8 times, full 8 times, always 4 times, whole 4 times, always 4 times, and miscellaneous 44 different translations. And I'm just grabbing words at random. I'm not being picky about it. Mem Lamad Ella, 107 times. Fill, 48 times full, 28 times fulfill. Well, that's pretty consistent. I mean, those words are very similar. But 15 times consecrate, 7 times accomplish, 7 times replenish, 6 times holy, as in W-H-O-L-L-Y, 6 times set, 3 times expired, 2 times fully, 2 times gather, 2 times overflow, 2 times satisfy, and 14 miscellaneous translations. There are some that the words are so different that they're almost unrecognizable. Amal, labor, is translated 25 times, mischief 9 times. Labor, mischief, that gets a little different. Misery, 3 times. Travail, 3 times. Trouble, 3 times. Sorrow, twice. Grievance, once. Grievousness, one. Iniquity, one. Okay, this is labor. And now it's iniquity. Labor, and then miserable. Labor, then pain. Painful. Perverseness, toil, weariness, wickedness. Wickedness, labor. What's the deal? How can a word mean so many different things? And some again, go even farther away than that. Extremely different meanings in different words. So, what's the problem? What means what? If you have a word like month that is translated, actually, if you look at the word that's commonly translated month, chodesh, it's which is chet delas shem. Three-letter words. That's another interesting thing about Hebrew, is three-letter words are translated into many different words and given many different meanings. For instance, the actual word chodesh is translated month 254 times, new moon 20 times, monthly one. It's translated another one. And it probably does mean moon, it's month. Anyway, but it has no common letters with this other word that means moon. Remember, that was Chet Resh Yah. No common letters between the word that means moon and the word that means month. Clearly means month. That doesn't make sense if the month is determined by the moon. Because that other word that we see translated moon is also translated month. And again, where you have it appearing as a month, sometimes in association with a word that is the name of a particular month, that word month could be translated a completely different word other than month. Now, why do I mention this? Because I'm not convinced the lunar calendar is right. Now, I'm still open. I've listened to lots of different arguments. I'm not trying to create doctrine here. But the fact is, the people at the time of the Pharisees and Jesus Christ, who were most like what Jesus Christ was, they tended to the weightier matters. They were extremely charitable people, the most charitable group of people. They would not take oaths and bind themselves in any way, but while the Pharisees took oaths all the time and demanded you take oaths, they would not force contributions, while the Pharisees forced contributions all the time. They did not believe in animal sacrifice. They considered that translation, they all spoke Hebrew, they were scholars in Hebrew, they considered that the animal sacrifice part of the translation that the Pharisees were deeply involved in was a fiction and a fraud. They did not use the lunar calendar. They used the solar calendar. Now, there's a great deal of evidence that the lunar calendar came from
sometimes our .com server goes down, so don't forget, we have a backup, firstamendmentradio.net.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free, or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, you may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month. And you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
So we're talking about the Sabbath. We're also going to talk a little bit about names and what's in a name, because the same people that are using dividing people based on the Sabbath or their presumptions about the Sabbath and when the Sabbath is are often dividing people also concerning the name. And so, real quick to sum up on the Sabbath, the word Sabbath contains several letters. Shem is one. The Tav is another. And Tav is the, if you go back in the Bible, you'll find that they talk about the mark of God being put on the forehead in Ezekiel 9:4. And the Lord said unto him, go to the midst of the city, to the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the forehead of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that he has done in the midst thereof. So what was that mark? And what were they putting on the forehead, or upon the forehead, or in the forehead? Again, we see words like upon. Those may be translated many different ways. Even in the Greek, the word epi, when they talk about the mark of the beast being put on your hand, on your forehead, or in your hand, or in your forehead, that word is epi, and it's translated about 15 different ways. It's a preposition, and it is not specific. In or on or any of those things. Even the word forehead, it simply means in your mind. If you go to that Greek word and examine it, you'll see that it contains the mark or number of the beast is simply in your head, in your mind. It doesn't have to be an actual physical mark. People take these words that have multiple meanings and they adjust them to fit their doctrine, then impose those doctrines on people, and we miss the weightier matters. This is the danger. This is attractive to the Pharisees, where they literally began to worship the letters of the word and the means that they ascribed to them instead of trying to understand the nature of God and His kingdom. And this is a form of idolatry, and it's very seductive, it's very dangerous. We grab on to these philosophies and hold on to them. The Sabbath is about faith. It is about taking a day of rest because, like I said, all Hebrew words have a specific and an abstract meaning to them. But why they choose those three letters to create a word is usually also contains a hidden meaning, a more spiritual meaning. And the Sabbath, just like this mark in the forehead, which was a taw placed in the forehead of the individual, which means faith, who is living by faith, which I will give you a hint, that's one of the weightier matters, faith. It's the last of the four, but it is in there. That's what the Sabbath is about, really. It's about faith. You have to work 6 days and earn your day of rest. That's what the Sabbath is all about. Okay, now let me ask you, how many of you people are in debt because you borrowed against tomorrow's labor? Okay, now we're getting close to what the Sabbath means. Sabbath means you do the work first and you earn your day of rest, the seventh day, after working 6. Now, if you borrow against those 6 days, then you're going to be doing the reverse of the seventh day. Your work week will start out with a holiday where you do nothing, and you will rest on the first day, and then you will have to be working all the way the next 5 days, and you'll probably have to work eventually because of interest, usury, you'll probably have to work on Saturday, too. That's the reverse principle of the Sabbath. That's the message of the Sabbath. To work first, take your day of rest. Okay? Now, the early church actually met often on Sunday, but almost everybody in the early church were Sabbath keepers. Now, why would they meet on Sunday if they were Sabbath keepers? Well, because they were beginning the work of the week. They were a kingdom. They had government issues to deal with in church because that's where you went to for your government benefits. And what are those benefits? They were all taken care of by faith, hope, and charity. Those that had shared with those that didn't. Remember, they were going through some of the hardest times in the history of the Roman Empire. Runaway inflation. We'll get to see that pretty soon here. Corruption in existing government. Jesus appointed a kingdom. The apostles were called ambassadors. They appointed ministers based on who you elected, who you chose. You look at amongst yourselves, pick whom you trust. We will appoint them over this matter. These men were taking care of the banking of the people, the insurance of the people, the social security of the people. They were going from house to house, rightly dividing the contributions of the people. And all the contributions in the kingdom were free will offerings. They had judicial decisions to make, but they did not exercise authority one over the other. If you had a dispute, you had to bring it before them, pick the men you trusted to be judge. You both did this through a kind of process of divorce, just like in picking a jury. They decided the matter, usually in arbitration, but it could be binding arbitration if you so choose. So this was a government, and they took the Sabbath off, and the Sabbath was probably a solar calendar even then. They probably didn't dictate to which calendar used in the early church because people were still working out their salvation with their faith. They were understanding that it was the weightier matters they had to tend to, and so they were doing that. It is this ritualistic approach to faith and the gospel that begins to draw you more into the ways of the Pharisees, that creates an idolatry out of doctrine instead of sending to those weightier matters. Again, do you know what those weightier matters are? I may reveal that just before we end here. So we also have an article that, like I said, we have one that goes through a great deal, talking about some of these matters of the calendar, and Sabbath specifically, not so much the calendar. I'm not dictating to you what calendar. If the law of God is written on your heart and mind, you'll know what day to meet. And if it's just beginning to be written on your heart and mind, then you will still be discussing that for a while. And that's good to discuss that amongst yourselves. And each congregation comes to a conclusion there. And be ready to change that conclusion if you are convicted in your heart and your mind to do so. But do not dictate to others what they must do to fit into your church. Because it isn't your church, it's Christ's. There's only one church, and we're in the business of conforming to Him. Now, the group that existed, we have many articles up on the group that existed, and many references to them, at the time of Christ, that was doing almost everything according to Christ. In their writings, you find the same philosophies and concepts and doctrines that we hear Christ talking about, you know, the taking of no oath, as I mentioned before, living by faith, living by charity. Not forcing contributions, not binding the people, but setting them free, and that was the Essenes. Now, our understanding of the Essenes has been greatly distorted because nobody was going to be passing down that information at the same time that they were going to try to bring everybody into bondage in the world. For the last 1,000 years, there's been churches extremely interested in bringing everybody into the bondage of the world. About 500 years ago, there was a Reformation, but that Reformation was a little chaotic at times. There's many of the people that were fighting and even dying to bring about that Reformation. Many of the things that they specifically said are no longer adhered to, but people again are dividing what they said up into doctrine, dividing the people again, because they're not tending to the weightier matters again that Christ talked about. And they have betrayed those men like Luther and different men who were the Anabaptists. Many of the Baptists are not seeing the messages of the early Baptists. They're separatist nature, and they are very much a part of the world. They pray to benefactors who exercise authority. A good book to look at, or pamphlet to look at, is The Sophistry of Sacrifice, which goes into this language issue as well as the fact that we have got it all backwards again, and we're back creating doctrines and forgetting those weightier matters. But besides the article on the Sabbath that we have on the net, available for free, under hisholychurch.info /sermon/sabbath.php, we also have one that's the same address, sermon/name.php. And that one goes into this controversy over the name. God does not need an ID card. He does not need to write His name out. He does not sign contracts with His name. Yes, He has a name, and that name is His identity. The Indians, this idea of having one name from birth to death, that's just to keep track of you. Indians, as well as the Anglo-Saxons in Europe, you would have one name at birth, and you have another name when you became of age, and you might have another name by the time you died, because you got a name according to the character of your life and the character of the life you live. But God has many names. We needed a name originally. He was referred to as the God with no name. Who names you? Your father names you. So who named God? His father named God? So, you know, it's a funny thing where we create this lettered representation for the character of God, and then we worship that letter. That's idolatry. That's the very definition of idolatry. You create a statue, and you worship the statue. You create an alphanumerical representation of the name of God, and you worship that. The name of God is who He is. Now, we go into great detail about and look at a lot of the arguments where people say, oh, Jesus, you can't use Jesus, you got to use Yeshua. The fact is why not say Joshua? Because the same letters are translated. We call Joshua Joshua, and it's the same Hebrew letters. So why don't we call Joshua of Nazareth? What there are meanings in those letters, and they're trying to tell you something. The word Jesus, for instance, does not come from Zeus. That's really a felonious argument that we go into great detail showing you that just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't even follow a logical line in the language. It seems to when it's presented to you, but we give you more facts, more information. And we're not trying to tear down the people that are trying to look into these things, but we're trying to turn you away from these abstractions and detractions of language that gets you all caught up in a more pharisaical approach to the gospel, because you will miss the weightier matters if you do that. You need to focus on those weightier matters. And again, if your ministers don't know what those weightier matters are, you probably got the wrong minister. So you need to turn around and go another way. I'm glancing down here through our little article on the name. And one of the things that I want you to remember is that the words that we use, especially the alphabetical representations of the words that we use, are signs of ideas. John said, we start the book, The Covenants of the Gods, with that statement. Words are the signs of ideas. That's from Johnson, who wrote the first English dictionary. These words that we write down represent concepts and ideas. In Hebrew, almost every single word represents a abstract idea as well as an actual physical idea and a concept. And we need to understand that in order to understand what the message of the gospel is. It's words that are so finite and redefinable, coming together in a book form and story form in order to express to you spiritual concepts and ideas. If you are not letting God write upon your heart and upon your mind, if you're using the knowledge that you have about words or biblical quotations, I really normally cannot give you the chapter numbers and verse numbers of phrases in the Bible. I almost always have to look them up because they're not in the original text. They're not conceptual. It's a different part of your brain that starts to remember numbers than the part that is remembering concepts. And I can shift back and forth. Women can shift back and forth from the left to the right side easier than men. But I can do it a little bit, but that's why you'll see so many typos on. I noticed several on the page when I was glancing down because of the fact that you use one side of your brain to hold the concept and the precept of understanding, and the other side to hold the numerical or alphanumerical concept, and that's left brain, right brain thing. And spiritual thing will actually speak to both, but it speaks more in concepts and precepts than it does in alpha and numerical. What came first, the physical world or the spiritual world? Well, we know the spiritual world was here, and it brought about the existence of the physical world. And it's the same thing with, even though God is logical, you can't find God by logic alone. If you think so, then you are eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You can find God if you find the Spirit. Spirit defines the world, and that's what we need to do. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their minds and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. So I recommend that you do not divide one another by intellectual information. Because most of the intellectual information floating around out there in the world, especially on the net, is incorrect. It's just flat out incorrect. It has to be, because there are so many contradictions. So you cannot get to heaven by cleaning pots and pans, by keeping of days, even the feast. Now, we had a Feast of Tabernacles here this year, Feast of Booths, Fall Feast, you call it, Fall Festival, you can call it all, anything you want. We'd like to have one here next year in September. September Registratory type calendar. And we'd like to have a lot of people come and set up lots of tents and set up booths where they share the information and knowledge. Everybody in Israel was taking the Sabbath off, and nobody tended to the flocks, and nobody tended to the chores, nobody milked the cows on the Sabbath. It's ridiculous. Anybody who lives in a rural community knows you cannot make that kind of commitment. Somebody had to take care of those animals on those days. You take these parasitical translations, and that's one of the problems with the Old Testament, is that most Christians went back to the Pharisees and said, what does the Old Testament mean? What does the Hebrew words mean? Again, the pamphlet which I'm working on to turn into a book, what is Corban? What is the sophistry of sacrifice? What is artifice in language all about? These articles will explain to you that we have been grossly deceived. The information is there. But we get these preconceived notions that come down to us from ministers who do not even know what the weightier matters are. They know all kinds of doctrine. They know all kinds of philosophies. They know all kinds of rules that they could put on you. Oh, you Lutherans, you can't go over to those Baptists. Oh, you Seventh-day Adventists can't go over to those Mormons. Oh, you Mormons, they don't even count them as Christians, according to many people. Because they got all their doctrines mixed up. You know, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, he wasn't on a cross. They always like to have the guy up on a steroid. Well, the fact is, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses are half right. They're also half wrong. We should do a deal on that. We should actually do a video on that. It's that Jesus was not carrying around a hanging or sawed beam that we always see him in these Renaissance pictures, where he has this square mortise and tenon beam that he's carrying on his shoulders. He was carrying a single cross beam. He was tied to it with rawhide thong, and they had to cut that loose because he kept falling down. And you fall down with that strapped to your wrist, which is the way the Romans transported prisoners all the time during that period. He would fall flat on his face on the hard rock ground. And so he had already suffered a great deal, and so they cut those rawhide thongs loose, and somebody else carried the cross piece. And so he was carrying a cross piece. When they get him to where they were going to crucify him, they would take those cross pieces, put the rope onto it, and hoist it up. They could actually take two guys and lift it up and put him on an existing scaffolding that was logs, round logs probably, put into the holes that were hewn in the rock on the top of Golgotha, and then he would be hanging there from the cross piece that was either hooked by ropes or hooked by the irregular shape of the logs that were in there, and then he would be nailed at his heels or through the foot to that log, and if he stood up, it would be extremely painful. He would stay alive if he he hung there, he would suffocate in a matter of minutes. Well, he didn't suffocate. He stood up, clinging to life, suffering. And normally they would break his leg, but they thought that he was dead, and they just pierced him with the sword. If they break his leg, they didn't stay out there all night watching these guys. They hung 1,000 men with crosses like this at one time on the gallows. They weren't nailing them to crosses and then lifting up the whole cross and dropping it in a hole. Anybody who's done lifting a beam should know that's not going to work real well. I mean, it's almost impossible to do. Romans were practical. And it's well understood how they did these things. So, but we draw these pictures in the Renaissance and we get these strange ideas that it was this way, and if it strayed from that, then you end up with the global wooden nailing them. Now, how in the heck did they nail him to the top of that beam? Was it already in the ground, wedged in the ground? Did they lift it up with his hand, his hands nailed to the top of a post? These guys go try that. They nail your brother to or tie him to a post and then try to lift that up. And you'll find that's almost physically impossible. Where somebody holding his hands up there while somebody climbed up on a ladder and nailed them. And you go try that with most guys and you'll find that's almost impossible. The Romans were doing this on a regular basis, so they got it down to a science. But, and I only mention this as an example. I'm not just trying to create new ideas for everybody to worship. The fact is, we get a lot of things mixed up because of the way in which we want to interpret the word. We want to have something physical that we can hold on to. The whole idea of relics is part of that. Because we're not really walking according to the Spirit. If we're walking according to the Spirit, we don't need all these physical representations. We don't need to have God's name written down on a piece of paper in our pocket so that we remember who He is. He is writing His laws upon our hearts spiritually every moment of every day. Are we moving by love? So are we moving by those weightier matters?
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.